Your old or broken phone can let you down when you need it most.
Perfect.
But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get the most for it. Up to $2,000 in value for an amazing new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence and a new line on my plan. And iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. That's like a 3-for-1. And you can get it on any plan. At Verizon, trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. The other guys won't give you that. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad. Up to $2,000 value based on iPhone, iPad, and Apple Watch.
And everybody, hello and welcome to Popcorn Culture. My name is Ben Carlin and I am your host. Here with me today is my brother Jay, who will be in every episode.
I'm here, Ben. We are back in office after a lovely trip up north with the wives.
I know. And it's nice. I feel like it's cozy. You know, we got a warm day, warm weather after some significant New York City wind burn. We got a nice crackling candle, fresh candle burning.
Fresh candle
in office.
And not just any candle.
Yeah.
This is our brand new sorting candle, which we invented.
Well, yes.
Yeah. Yes.
It was like, hey, wanna what be really cool is if we had a candle that when you burned it and the wax melted down, it revealed a color and that color sorted you into your house and you didn't know what house you were going to be in. So this is our sorting candle.
This is our sorting candle, yes. So like right now, if you're watching, you can see that it's all white, but it's lit. So hopefully by the end we'll know what house we're in, but when you buy it, it's a complete mystery. And then as you burn it, it will turn either blue or green or red or yellow, and that will tell you where you've been sorted.
Boom, bam.
It took some trials to get there.
I want to say this email chain dates back to at least 2022.
Yeah,
like it has been like years in the making.
They are finally ready. They are on sale now at Carlin Brothers Mercantile. They are so fun.
Yes, they're really cool. So be sure to go and check them out and let us know how you were sorted.
And we'll see what house this episode of Popcorn Culture has been sorted into by the end of, hopefully by the end of the episode.
I know. Yeah, so right now we're
waiting. We're sitting there. We've got the hat on our head.
Do you have any feelings?
I feel like it might be I'm going to go Slytherin.
I think it's a Slytherin. Okay. I swear on my life I was thinking Slytherin.
Okay.
We'll see how this goes.
We're being sorted right now.
So have big ambitious thoughts today.
Yes.
Try to bring as much Slytherin energy as humanly possible.
Okay, I will do that. I feel like I started good. I went to the YMCA this morning.
Did you really?
Yes, I did. Yeah. I was like, I got to get back in the pool. I got to keep swimming.
Yeah.
Got to keep making it.
And how did it feel?
It felt better than the first time. I'll say that for sure. I had like more of a goal this time, because last time I was like, just get in there, just like try and swim for like 10 minutes, you know, just like whatever, get back in there, get used to it. And it's so weird, because I think like since I've been on like any sort of like competitive swim team or done any kind of like swim practices was like, I don't know, high school, junior year, maybe senior year, something like over 18 years since I've really done like lap swimming in any sort of serious fashion.
So basically like an actual lifetime
ago. Yeah, a literal lifetime ago, which is so weird. But like you get in the water and it's just like, it's like this weird thing where like all of the mechanics are there. It's like you start going, you're like, oh yeah, okay. Like all my muscles remember exactly what to do. But then you like go down and back and I'm like, oh my God, I'm so tired.
Yes.
because it's a full body motion, you know, swimming freestyle.
Swimming is so much harder than I always think it is.
Yeah.
Because we did grow up doing like a lot of like summer swim team and YMCA related swim team and all that type of stuff. So we did a fair amount of swimming, which was kind of funny because we were talking about this in like one of the taxi cabs over the weekend, and sort of like that idea of like when you're a child going and participating in an activity and maybe even like now as parents trying to find that fine line between like what do you sort of like encourage them to do even though they're not going to want to do because they'll be grateful they did it later.
Right.
You know, and I know that like throughout our childhood, I had tons and tons and tons of those kinds of experiences. I would even say dating back to like all of our GMA antics, half the time it wasn't even fully clear if we were having fun in the moment, but it is a heck of a lot of fun to regale one another with the tales.
What's that called? Type 2 fun?
Type 2 fun.
Not fun in the moment, fun later.
Fun later.
It's fun like, later.
Yeah, we were freezing. Like, we were freezing. Like actually freezing.
Yeah. It's fine. Now it's fun to talk about though because we did it then.
Yeah, we came out the other side. And I think that swim team is, and I always felt this way about cross country and all the running and everything, but swim team is never something that I have had a high natural affinity for, which also partially makes me think I need to like find it again as an adult, because
right.
I was like, maybe when I was a kid, it was too much like I am here and I don't want to be here and I'm not like, and I'm like, I'm rejecting it before I've even given it a chance.
So you have like for so a lot of things you had like type 1 suffering that turned into type 2 fun.
Yeah.
This has gone from type 1 suffering to type 2 regret.
Yeah. I mean, it was just like when I think about cross country and all the running and all that type of stuff that we did throughout like all of our high school years and all that, like I'm like, that shaped me into who I am as a person. I think it taught me what type of like things I can withstand, how like discomfort is not something that like, you know, needs to immediately be abated. You know, it's like you can get through these things for an outcome that you will ultimately be happier for having endured.
Right. Discomfort is not the reason not to do it.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. But when I think back about swimming, I never think about those life lessons. I mean, I think largely it was always just waking up early in the summer and going and being in a cold pool where I kind of felt like I was like 50% drowning for most of every practice.
Well, I mean, especially the summer swim teams, like it was difficult. I mean, the timing of when you're supposed to go to swim practice is the problem, right? Because most of the time, like I remember, like we did summer swim team, but you're right, it meant you had to be there at 8 a.m. in the summer,
yeah,
and swimming laps in an outdoor pool, which therefore is not heated,
right?
It's not, I mean, maybe it's heated like a little, but like it's not like, at least when I go to the Y, if I get in the water, I'm like, whew, you know, okay, not too bad,
right?
But
right.
This was like every morning you had to like brace yourself to get in the water, and then you were shivering until you were like 5 laps in,
yes,
and your blood was pumping, and it was so cold, and it was 8 a.m. and it was the summer, and the Tour de France was on, and you were gonna miss it, and you have to watch the replay at 10. Ugh.
I this is the thing I think about, was that I did swim team, I think, all the way up until let's just say 8th grade, and then in 8th grade I started the high school cross country team, and we had summer runs the whole summer. And so it's just like half the time I think about like childhood and summer breaks, and as great as they were, it's like I don't think that I was sleeping in on my summer breaks starting in like 2nd grade.
Yeah.
You know, and it was just like, well, you reach adulthood and you're like, hey, honestly, I wouldn't have been opposed to like a couple of summers there just to sleep in.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I know what you mean. And then the other time I did swim team was for the high school as well, which is only for one season, but we didn't have a pool at our school, so it wasn't like, you know, you just finish your school day and then go to practice like you did for soccer or cross country or track or something.
Right.
You went home and then came back, went to a separate pool at like 7 o'clock at night.
Oh.
So, yeah.
Oh.
At night. And in the winter, mind you.
Yeah.
So it was like, okay, you got home, and then like maybe you ate dinner before you went, or maybe you didn't, you know, which meant either that you ate lunch at school and then didn't eat again until after practice because you didn't want to swim on a full stomach, or you ate beforehand so you swam on a full stomach.
Yeah.
You know, and it's freezing outside. So it was like, there was never like, the times of day were never convenient. Or then like I knew like year round swimmers who were always like way, way, way better. And they're like, their practices would be at like 6 a.m. before school or something. It's just like, there's like,
there's no convenient time to swim.
It's like, what you need, what would have been best, I think, is if the school had a pool that was indoors and you went to practice right after school. That would have been ideal.
Yeah.
That would have been the ideal situation. It didn't exist. So anyway, now I'm going before work. And I got to tell you, like, just the like figuring out the routine of like locker room. What do I need to bring? What kind of clothes? I guess I'm showering there. But that's been a whole new, like, I got to get back into the rhythm of like locker rooms.
Yes, I know. Yeah, you're right. Because there's like a lot of like little etiquette, a lot of like little isms that you sort of need to know because you're in this like very shared kind of private space.
Shared private space. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like locker rooms in that way are very like unusual.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, a little bit.
So. Well, so that's fun though. So like, did you feel, I mean, so today was the second day swimming.
Today was just my second day in the pool and I had more of a goal. I was like, okay, all right, I'm just going to go down and back 10 times. Just that's my goal.
Okay.
Like, you know, if I, you know, mostly just like stopping between each one to take like a little like breather or whatever, but just like do that, which would have been further than I went the first time. So I got through it and I was really like, they had, you know, one of those just deadly clocks
that
never stops moving. That I swear the swim clocks move faster than other clocks. If you don't know what I'm talking about, every lap pool in the entire world has, I think, the same either big yellow or big white clock that just has a big red hand moving around at what feels like when you're swimming at the speed of light.
Yeah.
Because the way most swimming workouts work, they'll be like, all right, you know, it'll be like, you know, do 4 times 50. And then afterward, it'll say like, go on 60, meaning like when the red needle gets to the 60 at the top,
right,
that's when you're supposed to go again. So your rest is then dictated by how long it took you to finish the lap.
Yes, and so often it's so difficult because it's like the person who then is slowest, which like I've, you know, been there, is also the person who has the least amount of rest in between restarts.
Exactly. But on the flip side, then if you are like, well, I'll try and get more rest by going faster, then you need more rest. I mean, then you're more out of breath
because you're more tired.
But I mean, to say it matters at all is also just like it never mattered, because historically they give you like 10 seconds almost no matter what, which is enough time for you to get to the wall, take a deep breath, look at the clock, say, oh man, my time's up, and start swimming again. Which is how it's always been. So I was like, I'm just gonna, whatever I finish, I'm gonna give myself 30 seconds, which was helpful because I could see myself being like, I'll just sit here for a while until I feel good again. And it was like, no, just go while you're still breathing hard. Like, as an adult who's self-enforcing it, it feels way better than being like a kid who's like, I have to like listen to this stupid clock.
Dude, I mean, I think I've described the like experience before as like cross threading. Like if you're ever like building a piece of IKEA furniture or just simply building more, I don't know, substantial things, like the idea is that you typically have a bolt that's going into like a threaded sleeve of some kind. And if you don't get it lined up just proper and you start to have like the threads like really dig into one another, then you're effectively like ruining both the bolt and the threaded you know, piece that it's going inside of. And you might be able to force it the whole way in, but once it's forced the whole way in, it's definitely not going to come back out smoothly. And chances are it's going to get 3/4 of the way and then it will not go any further and like the head will just snap off or something. So I think sometimes like cross threading is something that like I experienced, not like per anybody's responsibility, but like as a kid, even going snowboarding, which now as an adult is like one of my more favorite activities, is it's like I remember as a kid going, and it was almost like it wasn't by choice, like I was being brought there. You needed to have the day pass, but like I would spend most of the day tumbling and falling and feeling like cold and frustrated, and my, you know, my body hurt, and like it wasn't always positive,
right?
Even if it was building a skill that I would then value later in life. But I think the big difference was that like it felt cross-threaded. It was like I had to go. I was there. I was like, you know, I was kind of forcing the experience. And then as I got older, it was like, okay, slow down, back up, enter with a more like intentional focus,
right?
And then it was like, okay, now I'm having a blast.
Now it's a
and
blast.
This is exactly how I feel like I could imagine re-entering the pool at this age now, being like, right, okay, now I'm not here. I'm not part of a swim team. I don't have like a specific thing I need to do. I don't have, you know, Coach Brian over there.
Yeah.
Spitting whatever babble Coach Brian was up to.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, okay, I'm just here. I'm just here to have fun.
I'm just here.
I'm just here to get an exercise.
I chose to be here.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. I did this on purpose. So I think that's like the life lesson there though, is that like sometimes it's like, if you didn't like something when you were a kid, it's like, back up, reapproach it and see if you can't do it like more smoothly now that like you're doing it like under your own domain.
Yeah. Okay. That's very, very true. I would say the other thing that I do like, I mean, I don't think I have as much disdain for our past swimming history as you do.
Sure. I also know I'm killing mom right now. Who I know is listening and who I know loved swim team as a family activity that we were all able to do together, which that part of it was very fun.
That was fun. Cause like, yeah, we would go to like summer swim team, but it wasn't like mom dropped us off. Like mom was also on the swim team.
Yes.
And did the practice as well. So that was cool. It was like very all ages, which was nice. And that's how it was for like our entire region, which was cool. What was I going? Oh, okay. So in our last Pluto video on Super Carlin Brothers,
yes,
we had like one little joke where we were saying like, oh, this was like, it's such a fun, like family-wide hobby, like maybe the best fun we've ever had. And then like you popped in and were like, well, what about aquariums?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Which I thought was hilarious. But then afterwards, but I was never into aquariums the same way like you and dad were into aquariums.
Right.
And yet I was next to aquariums a lot.
Yeah.
So like, even though I know just a fraction of what you guys know about fish, like if I am in other settings with other people that don't include you and dad, I still tend to be the most knowledgeable person about fish.
Yes.
Which is like, that's always like, oh yeah, I have a few more surprising facts about fish than you might know, than you might think.
But really, what's something you don't know about me? I know a little bit more about fish than you might expect.
That is how I've felt about swimming though, like for my whole life. People are like, oh, do you know how to swim? Like a lot of people, when you say, do you know how to swim? It's like, they know how to be in the water without drowning.
Right.
You know what I mean? But yes, it's like they're not necessarily like if you were like, oh, okay, do you want to do some like butterfly or some breaststroke or backstroke or whatever or freestyle? Like they might not even know how to do the strokes.
Okay.
So it's sort of like were we year round hyper competitive swimmers? No. But I think like we at least know enough. Like we did all the swimming though.
Yes.
Like we know how to swim like the strokes and like what the events are, what the IM means, you know,
the individual medley.
The individual medley. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Got to do them all.
Right.
So I think like that is something I've always enjoyed about swimming. It's like, if I was just like at the pool with any other regular person, it's like, am I like just going to be, am I like a better swimmer than that? Like, I'm probably a better swimmer than your average person, even if I haven't been in the pool for like 10 years.
Right, right. Yeah.
Like, I remember our friend John, who we talk about on the podcast a lot. Like, he was always so good at just everything.
Everything.
But this was the thing where it's like, John, very like big, muscular guy, had a pool. Not like a lap pool, but like, you know, like a backyard.
Like a backyard swimming pool.
Kind of swimming pool. But like, while in many endurance things, John was just high and way better, swimming was one where we were all pretty even. Where like John never did competitive swimming or did any kind of swimming practice at all.
Right.
But he was just strong enough and had just the iron will of someone who was determined to win.
Yes.
And yet we could keep up with him.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
In this rare circumstance.
In this rare circumstance, because like we knew how to like swim.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's even that though, I'm like, all I'm remembering is what one particular occasion where we had a row of libations set up. And what do we call it? Carbonated bread water.
Yeah.
And
bread soda.
Bread soda. So we had two bread sodas. And you would consume one, swim down to the other side, consume another, and then swim back down the other way as part of a relay.
Yeah.
And I think that it was like me and Mike versus you and John. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty sure you guys won. But I remember getting to the end after having had the second one, and it was like I didn't get sick. I like literally was the equivalent of a bread soda that had been shaken up and then had the top popped.
Yeah.
Like the foam was just literally coming out of me.
Well, because I'm sure what happened was you just chugged it as fast as you could with as little breath, turned around, and then proceeded to hold your breath for the short length of John's pool.
Yes.
Effectively creating a sealed can.
Right. Yeah. Right, yeah. Yeah.
As it shook up inside you.
Right. It was the weirdest experience ever. It was just like I was just tipped over and it was just foam exiting my face.
Oh, good times.
Good times.
Yay, swimming.
I know.
Anyway, it was easier on day two, but still hard.
Okay.
But I've been doing some breaststroke at the end.
Okay.
And it is amazing to me. Like, as a kid, I think, like, that was always my favorite one. It was always the one I was, like, the best at. And it's like, as an adult, it's like, I still got it. It's still there. It's still fun. I still like it.
Awesome.
It's like, I don't think it's, like, it's certainly not faster than, like, freestyle or anything.
Which is your typical swim,
which is, like, yeah, your regular, yeah, like, arm over arm kind of thing. But it is funny how, like, you're doing it and, like, all the mechanics just come back. It took me, like, a few links to be, like, remember to, like, breathe out underwater.
Okay.
Instead of, because, like, what you're supposed to do is go 1, 2, 3, and then, like, whatever arm you're reaching forward, your neck turns to the other side so you can breathe out. Or so you can take a breath in,
right,
on that side. And then you go 1, 2, 3, and then you go to the other side. And that's like how it goes. But then you're supposed to breathe out underwater, because otherwise when you come up, you're going to have to go and breathe out then in. And that's not efficient.
Yes, yes. Even as you're describing that, I'm like, as many laps as I've swam in my life, I'm like, I don't know if I ever quite got that right. Because I always felt like I was like, I felt like I was always chastised for the amount of time I was like pulling my head up out of the water. Or I would often need to like almost like stop doing the head tilts altogether and like just pull my whole head out of the water to like breathe.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, yeah. I just couldn't figure it out.
Breathing's hard. I mean, that's the thing. That's the thing. Hard. It's like, not only is it a full body exercise, but you are not giving yourself the full amount of oxygen because you're holding your breath because of the water.
Because of the water.
Because of the water.
Yeah. And as much as I love water, that's the other thing too. Like
I know.
I love being around water, and I love the idea of even like getting good at like not free diving, like to extraordinary depths, but like almost like where you would like snorkel at like maybe 20 to 30 feet depth,
uh-huh,
and just being able to like swim down to the bottom and sort of like do like a scuba diving sort of experience,
yeah,
but then eventually kicking off and, you know, seeing if you can't spend like 2 minutes down there. Or
right.
Like,
oh boy.
Like that sounds like so much fun to me, but yeah. So I don't know. Maybe I'll join you at some point.
Okay. Well,
go,
you know,
go swim some laps.
By all means. Yeah. We'll go swim some laps.
Yeah.
It'll be great. Super fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Transition.
Transition.
Your old or broken phone can let you down when you need it most.
Perfect.
But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get the most for it. Up to $2,000 in value for an amazing new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence and a new line on my plan. And iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. That's like a 3-for-1. And you can get it on any plan. At Verizon, trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. The other guys won't give you that. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad. Up to $2,000 value based on iPhone, iPad, and Apple Watch. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone. Which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
All right, so we have taken flight away from swimming and landed in New York City.
We made it. Yeah.
Yeah, we made it.
We made it. Yeah. Well, so this past weekend, we took a trip that we had gifted to the wives and our mom for Christmas. And we were going to see Wicked,
yes,
on Broadway, which was so, I mean, it was so exciting because it felt like we saw Wicked Part 1 in theaters back in November. And I think to both me and your own individual surprise, like just absolutely loved it. Like I mean, in a way that like I had, my anticipation for it was effectively zero.
Mm-hmm.
Like I didn't know what to expect. I remember seeing like the first preview maybe during the Super Bowl,
yeah,
and kind of thinking like, I don't know if this is gonna be good.
Mm-hmm.
Like and I don't even think like we really talked about it all that much as like the year went on. But the really weird thing about Wicked, as I'm sure you know anybody listening to the pop knows already, but is that the film is the first half up to what at the Broadway show would be the intermission.
Yes.
And then the second piece of it is set to come out this November, and we will finally get the conclusion to it.
Yes.
The really odd thing is that we, as people who like to make fan theories, were immediately spinning tires, being like, okay, what about this? What about that?
Yeah,
what about
what's going to happen?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And oddly, we could have just found out. Like, we could Google the answers.
The answers, right.
They're just out there for the taking. Anybody who watched the video was either probably on the edge of their seat, like, wow, like, you know, didn't think of that, or possibly totally agree, did think of that, or I've seen the whole thing, and oh my gosh, I'm ripping my hair out.
Right.
Yeah, so, I mean, all sorts of, like, weird experiences. So the ability to go and see it on Broadway was really thrilling, and it almost felt like a cheat code. It was like from my perspective, I'm like, I am getting to go and know the ending, like, now, what, you know, 7 months
ahead of time
before the film will come out, where I would otherwise see it. And now I just get to go and see it even in a more authentic way.
I know. And it's like, I don't even, like, it has not made me any less excited to see part two, the movie.
Oh, I know. Yes.
Either. Because now that I've seen part one, it was like you're watching the first half of the Broadway show and it's just like, oh man, they added a lot to the movie.
They did.
Like,
yes.
They fleshed out a bunch of scenes and, like, made things a little more, like, it's, like, different enough. And then it was like, act two felt like, you know, it felt like very, like, fast paced, like, which I think happens in a lot of Broadway shows, like the second act is shorter. But now I'm like, no, we got a whole movie for this. They're definitely going to, like, flesh out more of the stuff. And yes. Like, if they're trying to keep it consistent with the Wizard of Oz movie, which I think it seemed like that's what they were trying to do, because they showed, like, Dorothy and the Scarecrow and the Tin Man on the Yellow Brick Road at the beginning of the movie. So it's sort of like, we're trying to connect it specifically to that movie. It feels like there were some things in part two that they'll have to, like, I think it'd be very easy to do, but just sort of, like, curtail to, like, make sure it fits more perfectly. Because there were some things you'd be like, well, when's this supposed to be happening? Like, you know, like.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But I mean, I would say, though, that, like, you know, as we had this action packed weekend, I'm sure we'll talk about all the various activities and things that we got into. But, like, as the weekend kept going on, you know, like, I felt like Alice and me would just be, like, sitting down having a coffee or whatever. And she'd be like, so what's been, like, your favorite part so far? And I mean, the thing I kept coming back to was just, like, the end of the Wicked movie, the end of act one.
Yeah.
Like, where Elphaba is just having her moment, like
flying,
like, just that, if nothing else, is, I mean, in all of it's amazing, but just that, I was like, this is so next level.
Dude,
this is so good.
It was like, I mean, it was so magical. It's one of those where you're just like, I don't know how they're doing it, but they're doing it. And like, I love that I'm seeing it. And then having seen the movie, like remembering the scene in the movie and then, like, seeing where it came from and how they changed it and how they were, like, paying homage to that, like, the way they do it on stage.
Yes.
It was just like, oh my gosh, all of it's so cool. Like, I love, it's making me like the movie more. This moment is insane. Like, it is so cool.
Yes.
Like, I loved just every second of it. And it's like, when you said, like, your bar was super low going in to see Wicked, like, I expected to, like, I think I had, like, the, like, when I saw the trailer and stuff, like, I thought it looked really good. And, like, I've always kind of, like, I've listened to, like, some of the music ahead of time, like Popular and Loathing, or, you know, What Is This Feeling, stuff like that, Defying Gravity. So, like, I knew kind of going in, like, what some of the songs would be. But so, like, I went in thinking it would be good, expecting to like it, like, with a pretty high bar. And then it exceeded that bar by, like, a lot.
Yeah.
And it was just like, I'm sure, like, if you grew up watching Wicked, you're just like, well, yeah, duh, of course. Like,
he's Wicked.
This is why it's Wicked, you know? But it's like, I feel so weird because, like, for the longest time, like, when people ask me, like, what's your favorite movie? I'd be like, I don't know. Like, maybe this, maybe that. It depends on the genre. And at the moment, at this moment in time, I'm like, it's Wicked. Like, that's my favorite movie.
That's
right
awesome.
Now, you know? And then we saw the show, and because it is, like, the one movie that I've seen in the past few years where it's like, we saw it and then we talked about it every day for 3 months.
Yeah.
Like, literally every day it would come up, or we would listen to the music, or, like, and I, like, just conversations with everyone. And then, like, we saw the show and it's like, it's the same thing. It just stuck with you. I woke up thinking about it, you know? It was like, and I've never been huge on the Wizard of Oz, you know,
nope.
Or anything like that. But, nope. Like, it's like, This is what I liked about. I don't want, like, if you're, I don't really think this is spoilers, but if you really, really just want to go in completely cold, maybe skip ahead a little bit here. So, ready? I'll give you like a few seconds. Right there. All right. So, like, what I think is really interesting about Wicked is that it turns the Wizard of Oz into like just like a side quest. It's like the real story is Wicked.
Is Wicked.
And what you're seeing in the Wizard, it'd be like if they made Rogue One first, you know?
Okay.
If like they only made Rogue One and then Rogue One was there by itself for like 50 years, you know, and everyone was like, Star Wars is so good.
Right.
And then they came out and they were like, here's a new hope and the Empire Strikes Back and the Return of the Jedi. And you'd be like, oh, or maybe they even did like all the prequels and you'd be like, wow, Rogue One was really just sort of like they reference it for like one sentence.
Right. It's like people are like, oh my God, I love Star Wars. It's the story about like where there's like this huge galactic empire and you have to steal the plans in order to like take them down. And like, yeah, so like you get to see the team go in and like they steal the plans. Like the Empire is going to lose. Like they won.
Right.
You know, they got them.
They got them.
You know, and then it would be like, oh, okay. After they got the plans, there was a lot.
There was a lot more. And you know what? There was a lot that led to that too.
Yeah. It wasn't just Rogue One. You're right. That's a really good description.
Yeah. So that's like the fascinating thing. I think it's rare for a prequel to like be like, nah, we're the real story.
I know. Well, and I feel like what must be, I mean, because The Wizard of Oz, it is so iconic in so many ways, and it will always have like that magnificent place, you know, in sort of the entertainment hall of fame.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like it is. Iconic, but you're right. I mean, it's almost like our ability to like sort of tell stories and add more complex layers and even just like injecting like all of the theatrical elements and, you know, I don't know, like there's so much more left to give to that world.
Yeah.
And I think that's largely, you know, like a lot of what we got to see. And I mean, you could even make that same argument with Star Wars again, where it's like, even if you go back to the original saga, like the choreography with like lightsabers was pretty like simple,
pretty tame. Yeah.
Pretty tame. Like, I mean, like a lot of what you're seeing and like, it got better even, you know, through episodes 4, 5, and 6, but the first battle between Obi-Wan and Darth Vader, I mean, you effectively have two kids in the living room using like the leftover tube from wrapping paper.
Right.
You know, just whacking it back and forth.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
They're not really doing a whole lot more than just like, you know, like,
yeah, it's like that battle ends up being so much more about like what is happening, what is being unsaid between Darth Vader and Obi-Wan than like the actual action of the lightsabers.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, precisely. But then, you know, you scoot forward and I mean, certainly the prequels did a whole bunch of really unbelievable stuff. Like Yoda's spinning and he's like Yoda's a helicopter.
Yeah. The duel of the fates with Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan and Darth Maul.
Yes.
That's like, yeah. I mean, like, say what you will about the Phantom Menace, but that lightsaber fight is amazing.
With Darth Maul, like,
yeah, oh, the double lightsaber. I mean, yeah,
it's pretty baller.
Yeah,
it's
and then baller. And then you get to like, you know, even like modern day when you have like Kylo and Rey like taking on all those red throne room guards and
yeah,
that's just insane.
Yes, that is the choreography ramped up to like 12.
Yeah, it's like I don't know if I love The Last Jedi, but man, that is a really cool lightsaber battle.
That scene is
that
super
is.
Cool.
Some pretty cool things here and there.
But yeah, so anyway, I mean, I think in a nutshell, like Wicked, still absolutely incredible.
Yeah,
if you haven't seen it on Broadway, go see it on Broadway.
I know, like I feel like there's like this danger of like it becoming like very basic for like Wicked to be like your favorite Broadway show.
Sure.
Or something. Be like, what's your favorite? It's like, oh, like, I don't know, Wicked, to be like, oh, the most popular one. Okay. Right. Yeah.
Right.
Like someone who was really into Broadway would have like a, you know, one you hadn't heard of that much that are just sort of like off to the side or whatever. It's like, man, this is what real Broadway is. And I'm like, nah, I don't even care. You're just wrong. This is in the biggest theater. I don't know if that's true. It's in the Gershwin Theater, which was big. It was the nicest Broadway theater we've been in.
It was
an insane production. We got to see a brand new cast and it was so good. It made me like the movie more. and it made me so excited for the second part, and I'm definitely going to read the book now, too. So I'm just like, I'm in. Like, it was great. I love it. Yay, Oz. Let's go. Good times.
I love it.
Yeah.
Nice.
So fun.
Yeah.
All right. But, Wicked, despite being a huge, super awesome time, was far from the only thing we did in New York City.
Holy cow. Yeah. I mean, action-packed weekend.
Action-packed.
To say the least. I mean, it was by the time I think Sunday late afternoon rolled around, there was this moment, and it happened every day. Like, because we flew up early on Friday. We had all day there on Friday, and then, you know, all day there on Saturday. Saw the show that night. And then, you know, we're going through Sunday. We've had another action-packed day doing all of our stuff. And like, I got to a point where I finally got back to the room after being like at museums and doing stuff. And I like laid down. And the experience of like laying on the bed was that of like not having like eaten food for like 2 days, then being served like a steak.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like the best tasting food you've ever had in your life. It was like, I was so physically like exhausted that I was like, I have never been more comfortable in a bed in my life.
Ever.
Like just to like, huh. And it was just because we did so many things.
Yes.
Where do you
yes.
want to start?
Oh man, well I guess let's just start out on Friday morning.
From right? the beginning.
From the beginning. A very good place to start.
Yeah.
As it were.
Yeah.
Yes. So let's see. We set off from Roanoke. There is a direct flight from Roanoke to New York City, and it's really only like an hour plus, hour change, maybe.
Yep.
Not super long, which is fantastic. Because it meant our flight left at like what, like 7 or something?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah,
7.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, we were there by like 8. You know, we were there very early in the day to the point where it was like, even when we were leaving the house, it was like, well, should we eat? Because I think me and Beth set our alarms for like 4:30 or something just to, you know, really get ready and stuff and prep the house for her parents to come watch the kiddos and stuff like that. But, you know, I think we each had like 3 like Ritz cracker sandwiches or something.
Okay.
And it was like, no, we're going to wait. Because then when we got there and we were going to go to Liberty Bagels. But what's wild to me is that we got there and it was just like still breakfast time.
It was still breakfast. Know? Yeah. So we woke up in Roanoke, Virginia, and then had breakfast in New York City.
In
Times Square.
In Times Square.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was, which was just that was already so cool.
Yes.
So we flew into the city. We checked in the hotel, and then we had like a 20-minute walk or so probably to the bagel place.
Yep.
And there was talk. People were like, there's probably a closer bagel place. And we were like, no, no.
I know.
We're going to this bagel place.
Like, this is one of those moments, though, where it's like, I was like, we are dragging our people so far in the name of like, we know a place that we want to go to specifically.
Yeah.
And it's like, we're walking past bagel place after bagel place. And it's like, they're like, well, we can go in there. It's like, yeah, but trust me. Mm-mm. And then, I mean, it was tough too. Cause then you like leave the main drag and you're like going like 2 blocks, like away from like all the lights and glamour and attention and everything.
Yeah.
You're walking under like the scaffolding of New York City. And that's where like the spot we wanted to go to was. And it, like, I was almost jazzed about this, but we walked up and there's like a line like halfway down the block going out the door. And I'm like, See,
people
told
know.
You.
They know about Liberty Bagels, which the I guess like Liberty Bagels is famous, and they've got a bunch of signs on the wall that say like, you know, TripAdvisor's best Midtown restaurant 2023 or whatever, you know, whatever, all those little accolades and stuff. But I guess they're like famous probably on social media for the Rainbow Bagels.
Yeah, which I got.
Yeah, you got the Rainbow Bagel. Yes, which are I mean, they're so cool looking and it's like such a fun gimmick, but like, oh my gosh, are the rest of the bagels just also amazing?
Yeah.
Too. And we went there when we were on a tour with Through the Gryffindor last September.
No, last June.
Last June. Yes, that was the first tour. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Wow, wow, wow.
Time flies when you're having fun.
I know. Well, unbelievable. We made it back to Liberty Bagels in less than a year.
Yes.
And got some more amazing food, and everyone in the family got some, and it was like, it was agreed that it was the correct call to go to Liberty to make the walk down there. So that was a fantastic start. I love just the novelty of having woken up in my own bed and eating breakfast in New York City, though. I was like, this is... what is this?
Everything is working
out. How did this
so
work
well.
Out? This yeah. is so great. This is so great. So from there, though, we had some time to kill. We did just a little bit of shopping around the city. Of course, we had to go to the Disney store, you know, the big Times Square one.
Naturally.
Not that many Disney stores left. Had to check out for the Pluto pins.
I was going
to
say, did you find any Pluto pins?
I did find there was one. I got it.
Nice.
Yep. Spring. It was kind of fun because, like, the day before I had been on Instagram and I guess they just released, like, here's all the pins that Disney's going to make in the spring or whatever. And, like, that was on there. So it was like, oh, I saw it yesterday. Boom, got it.
Boom, got it. Yep.
Boom, got it. There Yay. That was fun. So we got that and just, you know, fun checking out the big Disney store. Then I feel like we just sort of like walked around for a little bit. Our hotel was really near like Rockefeller Plaza.
Yep.
So we checked out a bunch of the shops over there, walked through FAO Schwartz. Oh, this was fun though. We went back to the hotel at one point for, I guess, like Dad wanting to lay down because he was tired. Whatever. Come on. And we were like, all right, well, we're gonna go shopping. So we went for first we needed like a coffee recharge, and there happened to be like a cool little like French coffee place right across from the hotel. So we walk in there, but as we walk in, we notice there's a sort of like crowd of like, I guess like paparazzi outside of one of the hotels.
Yes.
And yeah, we're like, who, like, I wonder who they're like trying to see or who they're gonna see. But you know, you don't want to be like one of those, you don't want to be like, oh, let's just stand here and be part of the mob or something.
It's so like, I feel like I have to fight like so many of like my own curiosity instincts, because like you see it and you're like, wow, there's this huge cluster of people. There must be something interesting happening. Right. It's like, maybe I too should stand and see what the interesting thing is.
Exactly.
But you're like, well, this is probably somebody's privacy. You know, like, I don't want to be like, you know, like, you know, putting all this like extra, like whatever.
Right.
You know, adding to the glamour.
Right.
I desperately want to be like above that, but then there's also a small piece of me that's just curious. I'm like,
right.
What is it?
I know, like who's going to come out here? And you're like, you know, and then it's like, it could be literally just anyone, like, are we even going to know them if they walk past or anything? So we're in the coffee spot and Beth is like, I'm going to go see if I can figure out who it is, at least figure out who it is or whatever. And I think she was just going to like ask the reporters, and are you checking? Like I think I wrote down the name wrong on the sheet.
Yes.
Okay. Anyway, but she was just going to go ask, but she happened to walk out at exactly the right time. Okay. So walk out, and it is Regé Jean Page, like from Bridgerton, like
the Duke from Bridgerton.
Duke. And so she just like walks out, and he walks like right past her and into like the car he was getting into.
Yeah.
And she comes back in, and she was like, it was Regé Jean Page. We were like, what?
Like that's crazy.
There's no way that's who it was. You're like, I just saw him. He just walked in the car. I was like, that was so cool.
Yeah, it really is fun, because it's like that's like a very prominent actor from a show that, like, you know, Alice and I like a lot. Like,
yeah,
we watch like every season of Bridgerton and everything. I mean, granted, yeah, he's not still in the show.
But
he was.
But he was.
Yeah.
So that was pretty cool. It was pretty cool.
Yeah.
That I can see him. And then we just sort of wandered around for a little bit, because just doing a little bit more shopping there. But the big thing we had for Friday evening was that you can sign up the Peloton Studios, like the stationary bikes. Like their studio is in New York, so like 6 weeks ahead of time, you can go online and like try and sign up to be in the studio, like for one of the classes. Like when you're watching, there's people always around them, like doing it. You can be one of those people.
Yeah.
And so we were like, oh man, we should try and sign up. And it's like, it feels like you're going to Disney World sometimes, where it's like, oh, I got to wake up. It's like 6 weeks now. I got to get my fast pass right now. And it's like, as soon as it's up, and it's sold out.
Right.
You know, so.
And our 6 weeks out, we were at Disney World.
We were at Disney World. So yeah. So we missed the early possible entry to get in at all. But there was a Friday night class with Christine de Ercole, and who I've never actually done a class with on the bike at home.
Okay.
Have you done it? Because you got a Peloton.
I did get a Peloton, yes. But I have not done it. I, like, honestly, we've gotten our Peloton, and in the time that we've had it, we have been doing so much traveling.
Yeah.
So it is, I have gotten like three rides in
total. Oh, man.
Yeah.
How have you liked it?
I honestly took a picture like before and after my first ride, and I was pretty darn shocked at how, like, I mean, I look like I've been through some stuff. Like, you know, I'm like my face is swollen, I'm red, I'm drenched in sweat.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not the sweatiest like human being, you know, when it comes to exercise.
Dude, cycle spin classes like that will make me sweat more than almost anything.
Yeah.
It is. I don't know what it is about that. Maybe it's just like the lack of like the wind hitting you that you might typically experience when you're biking to like cool you off. But
yes, I mean, it is remarkable to me when you are riding bikes, if it weren't for the fact that there is like the passage of air over you, how drenched you would be. And yeah. I mean, you get pretty sweaty anyway, but yeah. Like, yeah, it's like then when you're stationary, it's like, oh man. Okay.
Yeah. But so like, was it a good experience or were you like, oh man, I don't know about this?
No, I really liked it. I mean, yeah. I am like dying. Like, honestly, this has been like the crazy thing. Even like talking about the pop, I'm like, I feel like so many of our pop conversations lately have revolved around like tour and Disney and like all the various like things that we've been doing.
Yeah, we've been traveling a lot.
We've been, yes. And so like, I am really, really, really excited because we are about to enter a like lull stage where, as far as I know, we have like no plans for like March, April, May, I think most of June at the moment. Like, I'm just right. like, I'm like, okay, things are like, I have the opportunity to like settle in.
I know.
To calm down. Like, my exercise routine, my sleep, like everything about my life lately has just been like one wacky roller coaster. And so I am just like, okay. Time to just do my thing.
No, I know. Like, even like last week we had like last week and this week we have like 4 day weeks of the or 4 day yeah weeks at the office because we took last Friday off and this Monday off.
Right.
But the week before that we had a regular 5 day week.
Right.
And like, we weren't traveling and we only needed to make like 4 pieces of content, and it was just like, oh my gosh, we were like so productive.
Yes.
You know, I think we got to like Wednesday and we're like, we made everything.
We did.
We have
all
2 whole days to just do extra stuff now.
To do what? Who knows?
We'll see.
I know.
We'll see what we do.
That's when I immediately get caught, like sucked into like the vortex of like, it's like, well, now that I have all this extra time, maybe,
I know.
Maybe we should launch 48 new shows.
I know. Even before we came in here, we were like, should we do like, what if we did like a Lost podcast?
Yes.
Know?
Yes.
Yeah. What if we just like, you know, we'll just go episode by episode. It'll be great. There's so many things I've forgotten about it. You know,
there's no way in the world we could possibly do a Lost podcast before we do.
I know. We've put ourselves in this, like, if we do another podcast, it has to be Name of the Wind because that's the one I think that you and I the most want to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And maybe like percentages of people like eighths of people are like, do it.
I know. Like, how many are there more active Lost fans or more active Name of the Winds fans, do you think?
Oh, I think Name of the Wind fans.
Oh yeah. Right. I mean, Lost has been off the air for like 15 years, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, I'm not even 100% sure it stuck the landing. So I know some people like it, but I know a lot of people also don't like it. So.
I think I've been, our friend Brett's Thoughts, who did a Javer's Ben with us last year, he's been making like Lost explainer videos on Instagram.
Okay.
And it has been like it's making me, one, want to watch Lost again, but I'm like, oh, you know, okay. He's like just getting into like the lore of the whole show and stuff, which is like, that makes more sense, you know?
Like, well, you know what I want right now is somebody to do, I mean, and I know that these exist, but like I almost want like a watch along with an expert for the TV show Severance, which is like the Apple Plus show. Goodness gracious. I mean, it's like nothing makes sense the whole time and somehow it's still wildly entertaining. And I have is questions. And I'm like part of me is like, Ben, just be a fan. Just watch it. Just let the story happen to you. And like, but every single thing that pops up on screen, I'm like, Alice, what do you think about this? What do you think about this? What do you think about this? And she's like, I don't think it's anything. And I'm like, but what if it is?
Yeah. It's like, what do you mean you don't think it's anything? They're not just making stuff up here.
They're just not making stuff
up. You
know,
they're making a point.
There just can't be a room full of goats.
There's not just a room full of goats, Ben. I mean, what's there's got to, the goats have to be important in some way. They have to be relevant. It's not just a random thing. You're not going to the end of the show and be like, hey, the goats. What about that?
What about the goats?
I feel like, you know what? It's Lost that's making people feel that way.
Yes, is what it is.
No, you're right. You're right. Because you know what everyone's asking about in Severance is like, what are they doing on the computers? What are the numbers? And you know what? It feels like we will get a conclusive answer to what are the numbers.
Well, if we don't, I'm going to be real mad.
I'm going to be real mad, Ben, because you know what show also had the numbers?
Yeah, what do the numbers mean?
Lost. The answer is the numbers mean nothing. They are the numbers. They're the numbers. They just show up and they're the numbers.
Yeah.
Numbers.
Numbers.
Yeah.
Spoilers.
They're there. Were you paying attention? Did you catch every reference to them throughout the show? Because they show up all over the place all the time, and they mean nothing. They don't mean anything. They just happen to be the numbers associated with the island. End of story.
End of story.
Dumb. Needed a better answer than that. Yeah. There are better answers for other things, but the numbers, disappointing.
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 Yeah. So anyway. I don't know how we got here, but we did.
We did. Severance. New York City. Getting back on... So, Peloton. That's how we started here.
Yeah.
We got to Peloton. So, we went to the studio to go to our class with Christine, which that was a pretty cool experience, too. Like, we got to get, you know, you get to go use the locker room, and it's, like, very nice and, like, laid out, and they've got, like, a merchandise shop up top to look around in. And we get in the class, and what was really cool about the class versus just doing it on the bike at home is that, like, obviously, like, that group mentality kind of gets, like, your adrenaline pumping a little bit more. But, like, oftentimes when I'm doing it at home, if I'm doing, like, a 20 or 30 minute ride or something, you can always see the clock, you know, like, you can move the clock, but it's like, I'm at least for me, a lot of times I'm just like, I'll, like, look at it and I'll be like, oh my God, it's only been 7 minutes. Ugh, you know, I have more to go.
I have this experience. Yeah.
And then, like, you know, like, but in the class, it was just like, it felt like we started and then we were done. It was just like 30 minutes up, down, done, you know?
Okay.
Yeah. That was like, you know, it felt like so energized
when
you're in there. I will say this, and I've long suspected people of doing this anyway, but you have to sign up like well in advance and then like pay to like, you know, do the class in the studio or whatever. And one of the things about Peloton is like as you're going, there's like a leaderboard that will show like your like who's done like the most output or whatever
right
in the class. And, you know, that's affected by your cadence, which is how fast you're pedaling, mixed with your resistance, which is how hard it is to pedal.
Right.
And that gives you your output. And there's like a leaderboard for who's got like the most output. And a lot of the instructors will be like, you know, don't even worry about that. The leaderboard is not there. Like, you know, we're not here to try to get to the top of the leaderboard. We're here to, you know, just be on the bike
right
or whatever. So, but anyway, obviously that doesn't matter to some people who just want to like try and like chase the leaderboard
sure
or whatever, which is fine. I don't care. But the thing is, you will learn quickly about Peloton is that like if you there's like a difference between trying to set high score and like doing what the instructor says, because like if you really just want to set a giant high number, all you got to do, like what you need to do is just crank the resistance high and then stand up and just pound on the pedals and not do anything they say the whole time, because that is just going to give you a continuous high output number.
Okay.
But it makes it very frustrating, because then if you're someone else looking at the leaderboard, it can just look like someone is like leaps and bounds higher than feels like even humanly possible.
Okay.
If you're following what the instructor says.
Right.
And it's just like, it feels like cheating, you know? In terms of like, you're not really here to do it. Like, who are you proving this to? Like, you're at the top of the leaderboard, I guess, but you didn't actually do the class, you know?
Yeah, I could sort of see that, because it is like, it's so self-enforced. So it would almost be like if you were at the Olympics and like it's like everybody else is like agreed to do breaststroke and you do freestyle and all you see is the finishing times. And it's like, well, this guy was way faster. It's like, yeah, he wasn't doing breaststroke.
Yeah, but it was a blind swim and they agreed to do breaststroke. So.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So but like, you know, there's yeah.
Yeah. But so anyway,
they're not handing out Olympic medals for being the.
Yeah. But so like, I can imagine people doing that in their house. I can, like, you know, being like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to try and just, I can see that even being a personal challenge while you're at home. Be right. Like, you know what? I'm just going to pick a class and I'm going to try and get to number one. I'm just going to try and be at the top of a leaderboard. I can see that existing. But then like in the class, in the studio, there were people doing this. And it was making me so mad. I was like, dude, you paid to be here. You paid to be in the presence of the person teaching the class. You're not listening at all. You're not doing the class. It seems like such poor form.
Yeah.
I was just like, this guy, you're not even, this guy. Oh, there was these two guys off to the side. I was so mad the whole time. I was like, because like even in the class, there's like a in studio leaderboard. So you can see like how you're doing versus everyone just in the room with you.
Yeah.
Or whatever. And it's just like, well, these guys are just. Okay, you're just ruining everyone's fun, I guess, a little bit, sort of.
How did you compare to, with the exception of these two bros?
These two bros.
Yeah, the jabronis.
Yeah.
How did you fare?
It was a class, there were 39 people in the class, and I finished the seventh.
Seventh?
Yes.
Wow, that's great.
Seventh. So if you take those two guys out of the equation, fifth, I suppose. Yeah, and, yeah, you know, if you want to put it that way.
I mean, I think we should.
I think we should. I mean,
as long as
fifth.
Yeah. Fifth. Heck yeah.
Yeah, no problem, man.
Very impressive.
Yeah, it was fun. That was cool. There was like, I don't know, like sometimes I think like the leaderboard can be dangerous. Like it can make you like feel bad. Like, oh my God, I'm like not doing well at all compared to everyone else. But there are other times where it was like, you know, like I, early in the class, I could see I was like slowly chasing down the person in front of me who was Dan Cycles.
Okay.
Dan Cycles. And I was like, okay, my number's moving up marginally faster than Dan Cycles. Nice. And then I like, we were even, and then I passed him, and then I got up to like seven ahead. And I was like, and then the person ahead of me was like 20 ahead or something. I was like, all right, I'm not going to catch them.
Right.
Their number's already moving up faster. So clearly I'm at the top of like this plateau.
Okay.
On the leaderboard or whatever. But then with like maybe like 7 minutes left in the class, suddenly Dan Cycles is like, he's cranking it up.
He's like, I'm coming for you.
He's cranking it up.
But I start, John Curlin.
I know. I'm like looking down. I'm like looking at his number, and now suddenly he's like creeping up on me, and it's like it was extremely motivating.
Okay.
At that point, because I'm like, there is no way, Dan Cycles, I'm letting you pass me at all. It is on.
did you end up encountering Dan Cycles at any point?
I have no idea who Dan Cycles was, but I did not let him pass me. Wow. I finished the class in seventh. I did not lose that spot. So boom. Whoever you were.
Couldn't be more proud of you. Yeah. Somebody like listening right now, they're
someone
like,
was like, oh man, I was just excited because John Crow was there. I know. Well, my name in Peloton, in case you're wondering, is Super Carlin J.
Oh, nice. Yeah. I think mine's Super Carlin Ben.
Oh, there you go. And Mom's Super Carlin Mom.
So hey, look at that. So you can find us.
Yeah, we have like a nice little naming convention going on. Hooray.
I didn't even know about y'all's either.
Oh, okay.
So that's really
so funny.
Yeah.
All right. That's cool. So anyway, if you like Peloton, if you go to New York, I would totally recommend trying to get in a studio class. It was super fun. Mom and Dad actually went back the next day.
They did.
And did a
yeah.
second class.
It could not be more up their alley in terms of like, activities. And I mean, they've got the Peloton at home, and I feel like it's just like Peloton is life.
Yeah, they love it. They love it. Mom, I think Mom got like shouted out in class by the instructor, which is always one of those things you hope is going to happen
right
when you're doing it. But it was like a milestone class for her. I forget which one she was at. 400. She was her 400th ride. So that was pretty cool. And then after that, we happened to be right next to Chelsea Market.
Yep. Which is a famous place full of delicious places to eat.
Oh, man. So much good food. And like Beth and Alice and our sister-in-law, Emily, and our mom had been on a food tour through there. So they had remembered a few like, oh, you got to try this like Japanese taco over here. And that was really cool. And we went down to the bottom floor where we found this like cool restaurant / like butcher, I guess.
Like a meat market.
Like
kind
a
of
meat
place.
Market. Yeah. Yeah. Situation. Where we got some pretty good food and then like a charcuterie board, which was really cool because like you could see behind the bar where they're like drying the salami that they just made, and you're like, oh, this is going to be good. And it was. That was fantastic. So that was like a very upscale feeling, or like very, like, what is it? I don't even know.
Authentic,
you know?
Yeah.
Right there. We made the salami ourselves. Here it is.
Here's that salami. Enjoy
you're
that
welcome.
Rind.
Enjoy it. Enjoy. And enjoy it we did.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also a really good beer down there. Although, then we went to a chocolate place.
Upstairs. Yes, we did. They had chocolate covered oranges.
They had chocolate covered oranges, a Ben Carlin favorite.
Yes.
And they also had a chocolate peanut butter and jelly bar.
Oh,
I know.
Okay, I've been thinking a lot about this because
yeah.
I like you are so much more like knowable, I think, than I am.
Knowable?
Yes.
What do you mean?
You have like activities and interests and hobbies and things that I think like they like align so like even the way that people like when they like draw us like for like any particular reason, I feel like you've got like the hair and the glasses and the mustache and like I feel like you always look like you and I feel like I always look like a guy.
Like man.
Like bearded man.
Bearded man.
Yeah. And but like then I mean I feel like you've got like the Pluto pins, you've got like the Peloton, you've got the now you've got peanut butter and jelly.
Well, I mean, I wasn't trying to have peanut butter and jelly. Yeah,
well, you know what, Jay? Now you've got it.
I've got it.
Jay has laid claim. He has planted the J flag into the PB and J.
The jelly. I guess you can just call me Big Jelly.
And I will. So, Jelly, tell them the rest of the story. Okay.
Well, here's what I think is actually happening. I think that peanut butter and jelly is just like kind of hot right now.
You think PBJ
is? I think PB&J is hot right now.
It's in like comedy.
It's in like comedy, which is a joke only the people at this office will get.
Well, you know, comedy's really in right now.
Comedy's really hot right now. I think that peanut butter and jelly is really hot right now. For some reason, I don't know why.
There's no mistake about it. Like, it is strange to me. Like, because this is going to go back to our tour where you found like a peanut butter and jelly shooter you wanted to get at a bar, and they were all out of like whatever materials. And then they were like, but we have a PBJ beer. And then we had that beer, which turned out to be totally amazing. And then since then, I do think that you keep encountering more and more and more peanut butter and jelly occasions.
Yes. So we were at this chocolate place, and they just had like a chocolate covered peanut butter jelly bar or whatever. And I was like, okay, cool. I'll get the peanut butter and jelly one. May as well. We're just trying random stuff. The beer was good. Maybe the bar will be good. I would say the bar really only subpar.
Oh, no. Okay. Yeah,
Not as good. But then later on in the weekend, we were, after Wicked, this was on Sunday, we bought tickets to go to Friends, the musical parody, like Friends, like the sitcom.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we're at
another jellyism.
There was another jellyism.
Yeah.
As it were, where they had like a bar and they had like themed drinks to the show. And one of it was called Joey's PB&J. And I was like, what? They have a peanut butter jelly drink here. Gotta get it, obviously. Now it's on brand. Then I was like, what on earth is when in Friends is Joey all about peanut butter and jelly? Like, he's into jam a lot. That's a thing.
That's okay.
Yeah. And I was like, I've seen Friends a million times, and I do not know what joke they're making with this. But then I turned the placard around and I realized, because the place we were at, not only does Friends the musical parody, they also do Seinfeld, which is Seinfeld, the musical parody, and The Office, the musical.
Okay, so they're big on converting sitcoms into...
Yes, that's the shtick of this production company. So when you turn the placard around, clearly what they actually made was the PB&J, the Pam Beasley and Jim drink for the Office one. And then they're like, oh, but for Friends, we'll just flip it around. And now it says Joey's PB&J. And I was like, I see what's happening.
Okay. I see what's happening.
Yeah, I see what you're doing here. But you know what? I love Jim and Pam, so no problem.
I will totally have the Pam Beasley and Jim.
Exactly. I rooted for that relationship for years.
I think I was just a young lad, you know, so it was probably not, you know, more into my adultism. But that was one where, like, in IRL, I desperately wanted Jennifer Fisher and
John Krasinski.
John Krasinski to like become married,
just like be a couple in
because
real life.
It was just yes, because I was like, it's so authentic, it's so good. Their relationship is like, that's how convinced I am.
I know, right? Because they did such a good job just being regular people.
Because I think that that's probably what's really happening is that you see Jim Halpert and you're just like, well, he's just a real guy,
he's a regular guy, so man.
It's like, it's not John Krasinski playing Jim Halpert; it's just John Krasinski, the dude from Pennsylvania.
Yeah,
from
exactly.
Scranton.
From Scranton. Yeah. Actually, on that note, they had like pictures where Jenna Fisher and Angela had come and seen The Office musical.
Oh, no way.
And like surprised the cast and seen them.
That's which incredible.
I know. I was like, oh my God. Could you imagine being in the cast and all of a sudden like the actual Pam Beasley is sitting in the crowd?
I'd be like, I would freak out.
I would freak out.
I'm like, well, I'm not qualified to do this anymore. Like,
yeah. So anyway, tried that peanut butter and jelly drink. And that one was also super duper good. Okay. I liked that one. I thought it was better than the chocolate bar. And then the next day, I couldn't believe, this is why I think it's like, it must just be like very in vogue. I don't know why, but we were at the M&M store and one of the flavors they had was peanut butter and jelly M&Ms, and I was like, well, I know what I'm getting. So I'm on a quest to find the best peanut butter and jelly flavored thing now, I guess. I didn't know I was going to be chosen for this quest, Ben, but you know, God works in mysterious ways.
That's right. Yeah.
This is what
Oz.
Or Oz. Exactly. So that's the journey I'm on.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Trying peanut butter and jelly flavored stuff.
Right. Right. Yes. Yeah.
I also learned some more lore about the initial beer.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, from Zool Brewing in Knoxville, Tennessee.
Yeah, so this is the beer going back to the one that we have on tour that yeah. we now need to track down IRL again.
Yes. Well, apparently their peanut butter and jelly beer is like their flagship beer.
Okay.
Like the whole brewery just does like fruit sours, and this is like their big one, their big successful one. And every year they have like a PB&J fest where they introduce a new flavor into the PB&J line with like a different flavored jam. And it's like a big mystery what the new jam flavor is going to be.
Oh wow.
Every okay. year.
That's
so
cool.
Like they've done strawberry before, and they've got like a bunch of other like fun ones. But then there's like clothing companies have like approached them to like use their peanut butter and jelly like marketing logos and stuff like in their clothing and stuff. And I was like, what is going on here? Like we have really stumbled into something.
Yes, especially for like something that like the place we were getting drinks from like was just a beer on the menu.
Was just a beer on the menu in Orlando, and apparently it's like some part of some deeper lore about peanut butter and jelly beer in Tennessee.
Wow.
I know. So I'm like, you know what? On my new travel destinations is now Zool Brewing as well.
Okay.
Got to make it happen.
Count me in.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So let's see. What have we not talked about from New York City so far? Well, let's see. So after we saw Wicked, that would bring us maybe into Sunday morning, where we had a food tour in the village.
In Greenwich Village.
In Greenwich Village, where the friends live.
Where the friends live. This yeah, we got to see the place like from the outside of Friends. This is Greenwich Village is one of those places that I think like I could have looked at on a map like a million times and not realized it was Greenwich.
Yeah. Yeah, like, it looks like Greenwich.
Greenwich.
Yeah. Yeah,
and I think I've even said that before and people are like, Ben. Yeah.
It's Greenwich Village.
Yeah. I think we did the same thing. We went to London and we were like, how far is it to Edinburgh? And they were like, do you mean Edinburgh? And I was like, yeah.
No, I meant Edinburgh, but how far is it to Edinburgh? I'm talking about a different place. I didn't mean that place.
Yeah,
I meant my own place.
I'm not embarrassed. You're embarrassed.
You're embarrassed. Yeah. You messed up. You don't know about Edinburgh. What an idiot.
Anyway, that's basically where Harry Potter was written. It was the first one. Yeah, so let's hear. So we're in Greenwich Village. We're doing a food tour, which on the whole, like I have heard people say this, including like our mom who like loves a like food tour in any city, and you as well. I think like went to Chicago and did it. But like I totally have to jump on the bandwagon that this is like such like when it comes to like tourist type things you can do, do this one.
Yeah,
like
do food tours.
Like, do it wherever you are, because these are the people who are the locals who found all of the best bites and have distilled them into like, you know, 10 that you then get to go and sample one by one by one, and also like learn history of the town and the area and be pointed to all the cool things. Then like the person who's your guide just ends up being like fun and awesome, like Bert was.
Yeah, Bert, you know? great tour guide. Loved that guy.
I just learned a lot from him.
I know. And now it feels like when you go back, now you can be like, oh, I know this cool spot in the village, and you can just take your friends.
Yes.
And you can say that sentence already. I already felt great saying that. I know a cool spot in the village. We can get some sandwiches.
So we need to go to the village because there's a really good spot.
Yeah,
where all the firemen go to get their sandwiches.
Exactly.
And if that's where the firemen go, it must be good.
That's the thing. It's like you're on the tour and you're like, how much, like, we're going to these places, and it's more like, how are these really the best places, or are these just the places that signed up to be a part of the tour? Because if they're a part of the tour, then the tourists will come there afterwards, and you know, like, is it how much like give and take is going on here?
Right.
You know, like it benefits the restaurant to be on the food tour, because then every day another 20 people think this is a great landmark spot.
Absolutely. Yes. Right. Yeah. And if they're ever returning, then it's like they're going to be like, oh, okay, you know, I was here on a food tour. Now I know the cheat code.
Exactly. Exactly. Which is, you know, exactly what I just said you should do. Why you should do food tours.
Yes.
And it's exactly what I plan on doing. No, but like, but literally we were at one spot and you know, he was telling us like, oh, this was, you know, telling us about whatever the place was. It had like, you know, it was like a sandwich shop, and they also had like a meat counter and everything. And you walk in, it feels very New York-y. But the biggest endorsement of this place, he couldn't have paid for it, but like whilst we're standing outside, a literal New York City fire truck pulls up and four giant firefighters get off and go in and get sandwiches. And I was like, well, that's all the endorsement I need.
Yeah.
Like if this is where they're eating. Yeah. we're good.
This is the
we're
place.
This
go.
Is the place
yeah.
to go.
Yeah, that's the box tick.
Yes.
But that's like also the thing that's crazy to me is that like if you were to have this sandwich, it'd be like the best sandwich you've ever had. And these guys can just come have it like on a Tuesday.
On a Tuesday. Yeah. Yeah.
The perks of living in Greenwich Village.
I know. There's so many. It's like there's so many perks and so many hard things. It must be about living in New York City.
Okay. I don't know how many times Alice and I had this conversation while we were up there, but like I think that New York City is so cool and so many people go there and there is just simply so much to do, so much, you know, shopping and sightseeing and people watching and just like, I mean, any and everything that you could buy, like opportunity galore. But at the same rate, I'm like, I could not live here.
I know exactly what you mean.
Not for like one. I mean, I think the appeal to me is less than zero. Like, I don't want to live there. I know.
There's like, well, because the other thing is like, if there was a time you were going to live there, it would have been like early 20s, you know, like during your 20s.
Oh, sure.
Something.
Yes. Miss the boat completely.
Miss the boat entirely. Like now, there's no chance. Like, I'm not bringing the kids suddenly to start living in the city.
Right.
That would be bananas. It'd be like you lived there when you had no attachments and then you gained a bunch and then you left.
right. But, and of course I do think there's a huge part of this as well, where it's like when you're in Times Square and you're looking at all that, like I think even like the locals would be like, yeah, like, I don't go there.
Right.
Like,
yeah, exactly.
That's not where I spend my spare time.
Right.
And then when you are in like Greenwich Village or something, you start to look around and you're kind of like, okay, this is very cool. But then on the flip side of it, like, you know, I think I have this like small business mindset that I can never fully shake, which is that like, I remember what it was like being at the like aquarium store that we owned once upon a time. And like how we had, you know, overall fairly cheap rent and how many people needed to come in, how many people needed to buy stuff in order for the whole thing to remain solvent. And so like while we're on the food tour, they're talking about this, like, you know, Joe's Pizza and how it used to be down on this one corner. And while it was on the one corner, it had this like, you know, amazing lease where it was like $900 a month for 25 years.
Yeah.
And then when the like lease finally ended, this is sort of like a rent control type situation or whatever. It was like, you know, set to be renegotiated, and then Joe's like, well, we can't afford it anymore, so like the new people move in. And it's like when you go from like the $900 a month, it was like the tour guide is like, what do you guys think like the new rent was after like they left, like what would have been enough to like force them out? You know, it's sort of like, you know, I think somebody lobbed out like, you know, 6,000, and it's sort of like, man, 6,000, that'd be like way up from 900.
Yeah.
And he's like, more. And I'm like, okay, but it can't be like much more. So like in my head, I'm like, 10,000, like, you know, I could maybe see it.
Yeah.
That it was $23,000.
Yeah.
A month. And I was just like, what? You know, and I mean, and I know that these are like, you know, it's the economies of scale that you're dealing with being in New York City, and like everything is more expensive, and therefore maybe like, you know, the pay rates reflect that, hopefully, in some.
How much pizza you got to sell per month to get to $23,000 just to pay the rent?
That's exactly, yeah, like where my head's at. You know, it's like, you know, if even in New York City, where it's like that door could be turning all day, every day, you could have a line out the door all day, every day, but it's almost like you might be required to have a line out the door all day, every day.
Because yeah.
That is so much.
It's so much. I mean, I know, I'm trying to think, even if you sold like, I don't know. I don't have my calculator. Yeah. Like even if you're selling like $7 a slice.
Okay. Let's see. Let's do. Yeah. We'll do some quick calculator math.
Okay.
Okay. So if let's just say not even to pay your staff or anything, not for electricity or anything like that. So if you're selling your slice for $7 a piece, you would need to sell 3,285 slices to make 23,000.
Okay. So that's like about 100 slices a day. That doesn't seem unreasonable for a New York place. And that's if people are buying one single slice.
And that's if they're buying one single slice.
Like not including drinks or like a whole pie, or they didn't come with their whole family and then you got two slices or whatever.
Right.
Right. Yeah. But that's, I mean, it's a lot.
It's a lot. And I mean,
delivery is a thing, you know, I guess with pizza. Yeah.
Also true.
Tips,
also true.
I guess.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, it's not like you can't see the world where it would work, but even as like, as reasonable as 100 slices a day can seem, like, I do remember doing my capstone course for my degree in entrepreneurial management when I was in college was basically building like an entire business plan. And I remember I did a food truck, and like I went through, and you know, it was like he was like, you need to try to determine like how many chicken dishes you would sell per day. And I think I was even like, oh, like, you know, like, I don't know, 18. Maybe I'll sell 18 of these a day. And I think in my head, it was like, okay, that seems like a, you know, like 18 doesn't seem like that many. And as I extrapolated the numbers, you know, sure enough, it was very similar to what we would have just witnessed. And
yeah.
It's like, okay, you know, that's just the chicken dish though. And then I also sell like a sausage dish and I'll probably sell 15 of those.
Right.
Like the more popular nacho dish or whatever, like that one, maybe it's 25 a day. And it's like, all of a sudden you're assuming that you're selling like 50 like items at lunch every day. And it's like if you can take those numbers and drag and drop over the course of like a year, it's like you are positively, absolutely killing it.
Right.
Like the numbers are like in the millions and you're like, heck yeah.
Right.
Like my business plan is brilliant.
Right.
But I do think it's a lot harder.
Oh, I mean, absolutely it is.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, even if you're like, you know, I'm sure there are places downtown that get like 10 customers at lunch and that's their rush for the day.
Yes.
You know?
Right.
And it's like, well, that, you know, I don't know how much that's, yeah.
I know. Yeah. It's all very interesting just to try to wrap your head around, try to get like a feeling for what like a baseline set of numbers is. But either way, I mean, the real point is that for any business anywhere in the world, $23,000 a month for your rent is, that's going to be a stout rent.
That is going to be a stout rent. And that's just for like a pizza shop in the corner at Greenwich Village, not even like the high traffic areas of New York City.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Because I think that there's a Joe's Pizza also in Times Square.
Yeah. We ate there.
We did twice.
Yeah. It was good. It was very good.
Yes.
Great pizza. Would recommend. It's where Tobey Maguire works in Spider-Man 2. We learned that.
We did learn that. Yeah. So if you want to basically see us, you know, cameo in Spider-Man from like, you know, 20 years ago.
Yeah.
We were there 20 years after.
There you go.
You know,
just imagine that.
Like, the guys were there. I got to see them. We're like world famous now because we've eaten at this place.
No big deal.
Good times.
Yeah.
Good times.
Yes.
Anyway, I'm sure we'll continue to sprinkle in more New York City antics over the weeks to come.
I'm sure we shall.
Thank you guys so much, as always, for listening to this week's episode of The Pop. As always, if you'd like to support the show, you can do so at patreon.com/popcornculture. Or if you want to send me an email with any feedback you have for the show at all, you can do that at popcornculturepod@gmail.com. Otherwise, until next time.
Pop, pop.
Today's episode was edited by Isabel Chrisley. Vaishon Brandon does our art. Catherine Stein is our production manager, and the show is hosted by me and Jonathan Carlin.
Your old or broken phone can let you down when you need it most.
Perfect.
But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get the most for it, up to $2,000 in value, for an amazing new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence and a new line on my plan, and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. That's like a 3-for-1. And you can get it on any plan. At Verizon, trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. The other guys won't give you that. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad. Up to $2,000 value based on iPhone, iPad, and Apple Watch.